You're listening to a Rhythms podcast from Bluesfest 2012, produced by the media students of Southern Cross University.
Everyone put your hands together for the most excellent Claude Hay. Thanks for joining us, mate. You're looking suitably relaxed for a Monday evening.
Oh,
very
really
relaxed.
Nice.
That's the way to do it.
Wouldn't mind this in my van.
I tell you what, I wish I'd thought of that first. You could sit over here. So how's your weekend been?
Oh, really crap. Didn't like the festival at all.
Terrible.
The weather's shit. The people, oh, I don't know. Oh, it's been fantastic.
From what I've heard around the traps, your shows have been great.
Oh, we've had a great time here, an absolute wonderful time.
Yeah? You were playing on this very stage a couple of nights ago too, weren't you?
Yeah, a couple of nights ago. I actually like this room. It's really nice. Nice and intimate.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Not too bad. Good crowd. That's the way to go. So is this your first Bluesfest? Is this the first time you played here?
First time to Bluesfest, yep.
Cool. Yeah. Impressions thus far then, from
it's
a performing
great
point of view?
Oh, well organised, run really well, the beer's cold. What could you want, really?
Comfy couches, can't ask for much more.
Comfy couches.
That's right.
Hopefully they let us take them home.
So you've been touring so much over the last couple of years. I think it's about time we saw your act here at Bluesfest.
Yeah, it's been a pretty busy 6 months, really.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. Probably even more so since Deep Fried Satisfied was released a couple of years ago.
Yeah. It all kind of actually spurred off that album, really. A lot of that.
Yeah.
When it was released overseas.
Cool. So speaking of touring, you've been doing a lot of that with Chase the Sun, Cass Eager, people like that. It seems I was speaking to Ryan from Chase the Sun, the bass player, and we're saying to him that it seems like you guys have got quite a little cottage industry going on there.
Yeah, we've got a close little unit of friends.
Yeah.
We kind of circle each other around a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Because obviously, Paolo, the drummer for Chase the Sun, is into management and booking as well. So, and
yeah,
everyone seems to play with each other up on stage and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's basically a family. We've actually done a family tour run, we've called it. And it's great. We're all just good friends, and it's always good fun to sort of go on the road with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine having that kind of support base behind you would be very gratifying and vital, as an up-and-coming artist in this day and age.
Yeah. We get to see some good music, and we never get sick of each other. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. So, speaking of the Chase the Sun boys, Howler and Ryan, I hear that they've been contributing some rhythm section work to some tracks you've been recording recently. Is that the case?
Yeah, just about three quarters of the way through the next album. And
okay.
Started it off, actually recorded some of it in Memphis at Sun Studios.
Yeah.
Started a little bit there.
And
also, most of it's done in Katoomba in the Blue Mountains.
Yeah.
And a little bit down in Springwood. But they played on, Howler played on a couple of songs and Ryan jumped up and it's great. It's really, really nice to have a...
Yeah, fantastic.
Just to introduce a little bit of a band thing.
Yeah,
that
cool.
Could possibly happen later on.
So how long have you been working on this? Because obviously this will be the follow-up to 2010's Deep Fried Satisfied. How long have you been working on this one then?
I kind of sort of squished it in the last kind of... pretty much since America, really. So that was about maybe 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So once every 10 days, I'll go somewhere and try and sort of book in a place and get into the writing side of things. And
yeah.
But it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's been a good couple of years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been too long. I just haven't been home for a couple of years.
Yeah, no, fair enough. So you mentioned you did some recording in Sun Studios in Memphis. I mean, this is one of the legendary studios in the world. How did that come about?
I had a real shit trip. I had, at one point, I was playing in California and then the next gig was in Kansas City. And as everyone laughs at me, but I kind of stuffed up the plane booking side of that thing and the train. So I had to catch a Greyhound bus, which was a horrible experience.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy on my left-hand side was got busted with $36,000 worth of cocaine in the back of his car. And the guy on my right was... got done for armed robbery and I just didn't sleep for 36 hours on that bus ride, so I wrote a few songs about that.
Yeah.
got a bit of an influence from that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's sort of, I think that's probably the first song I wrote on the album, and then after that, started from the top of the Midwest, went down to the bottom, and I had about 4 days off after Nashville and I just had to go to Memphis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's not too far from there. And
yeah,
then we did the tour of the studio, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then I didn't realise that they could still hire it out. So we kind of went in there and just threw something together.
Yeah, right.
And it was a buzz. It was more. I actually enjoyed the tour of the studio more than actually playing. It was just there's so many cool little bits and pieces inside
that
studio.
Yeah, no doubt. It'd be like almost more of a museum than a studio.
Yeah, it really is. It's more of a museum. And they actually locked up the studio part of it for about 15 years or something. And
yeah.
Then they've opened it up and now it's all...
fantastic. Mm. Fantastic. So who, like, was that just you going to record there or do you have...
Yeah, just me and bits and pieces. I really only just put some layers down and...
Yeah.
And it was a good place to just sort of throw it down before I forgot them.
Okay, yeah, cool.
If I lost my phone, I put all my songs on my phone.
Yeah, that seems to be the norm these days,
I guess. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Back, you know, years ago, you used to ring up home and put it on your answering machine.
Now yeah, that's right.
So convenient.
Yeah, fantastic. So this new album then that you're obviously working on, how's it sounding so far?
I'm loving it. It's kind of got a bit more of a funk, rootsy feel.
Okay.
A little bit rockier too. But it's just been a bit more of an experiment, and I just can't wait to get it out there. Really,
yeah,
it's,
absolutely.
It's one of those. We always get excited about a new album, and
it's
been a while, so it's more of a drive to get it
definitely.
Out.
Definitely. Well, since Deep Fried Satisfied, like we're saying before, you've been on the road a lot. You've been playing a lot. Obviously, like you grow as a musician and that kind of stuff. So, like, how is this sounding different to Deep Fried Satisfied? Like a bit funkier, as you were saying, but like, where else is it showing difference?
Probably a little bit. I mean, Deep Fried was kind of more of a. Not acoustic album, but the instruments are more acoustic sounding. This is kind of a bit more dirtier sounding with some nice valve amps and just a bit more of a dirtier edge and also bringing a bit of funk. And of course, with a couple of bonus songs on there with Ryan and that, it's really brought in the sort of the P-funk influence stuff that I love.
Oh, okay, so cool. Yeah. So you've kind of risen to prominence, I guess you'd call it a one-man band.
Yep.
How's it been playing with the rhythm section on a couple of tracks, particularly a rhythm section as high octane as Howler and Ryan?
It was an absolute buzz. Yeah. I mean, it's really nice to hear, because I'd write the songs originally first as a one-man thing, and then we kind of just messed around, really. And just the first go, it sounded phenomenal. It just really loved you to have all those dynamics and the little intricacies in there
that
you get. With a whole band, but those players are just freaks.
Yeah, definitely. So, for those who haven't seen you play, I remember the first time I saw you play was on the blues train in Queenscliff, and I was lucky to be sitting in the seat right next to where you were playing, and I was looking at your setup and wondering what exactly the hell was going on. So perhaps you can describe to our audience your setup.
Yeah, well, basically, it's just a looping thing, really. It's a... I kind of just use a basic, the smallest little loop pedal. And my main instrument, I guess I use, is a twin neck guitar, which has a bass at the top and a baritone guitar down the bottom. So it's basically so I can switch between a bunch of sounds without having to put things down and pick them up again.
Yeah.
And it's got kind of like piezo pickups in there to give it that acoustic tone. Then you can switch it to sort of your Tele Strat type pickup. So you can switch between a bunch of different sounds quite fast. It's very good for a live thing. But that all just runs into a loop pedal, and I'll generally just loop a bass line for a bar, maybe four bars or something, and then play everything over the top. I've got two pedals on my right foot, which is one's a kick pedal and one's a snare pedal. My left foot's doing all the cymbals. And kind of just, loop the bass line and play everything else over the top.
Yeah.
Just to kind of fill it out and give that sort of full band sound, and we'll try to anyway.
Yeah, you definitely get a full band sound. Like, as I said, watching it, it's quite incredible how much exactly is going on just from one person.
Yeah, right. great.
So let's go back a little bit to Deep Fried Satisfied, which was your second full-length album, which you released in 2010. And I think it's fair to say that this album was incredibly well-received, particularly over in the US, where it's notoriously hard to get a foothold, what with America being, like, you know, I guess the birthplace of roots music. So, that's great.
Yeah, it's good. well, quite lucky. I got picked up by a very small independent record label over there and went through a distributor, and it really just from one radio interview I did over there, that was really only the only thing that spurred it over there. That was about maybe 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, and I flew over there, played two songs, packed up and flew home, and there was about 25 million listeners.
Yeah, right.
In that one day, and it from that got into a lot of festivals, and then just keeps it rolling. And but really, it was just from that radio interview, which kind of got things going over there. And now it's sort of got our feet on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. So how much time have you spent in the States since you did that interview?
I've gone over there three times, I think, now.
Yeah, right.
In total. The last one was the longest. It was about roughly about 2 months, I think.
Yeah.
A month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah.
And I drove most of that.
Yeah.
I bought a... our budget was to hire a car, and I cheaped out. I went to, what was it, Craigslist, and bought this junky little car that had rust all over it.
Yeah.
And it did the whole of America, from pretty much from California way up north all the way to Alaska. Didn't drive to Alaska, obviously, but then... actually, no, we didn't get in Alaska. And then got it in Midwest, went all the way down south, and then to New York, and I didn't even get a flat tire.
Wow.
Nothing.
There you go.
That's and sold it for the same for $50 less than I thought. I was happy about that.
That's way better than a Greyhound bus.
That's way better.
Yeah, cool.
The Greyhound was the bad part of it. But,
so has the record been as successful here in Australia?
Yeah, it's been really good over here. I mean, just obviously the numbers are massive over there. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's been really good here too, actually.
Yeah.
It's, I can't complain.
Yeah, good call. So looking back then, because obviously it was quite successful, were you surprised at how successful Deep Fried Satisfied was for you?
Yeah, I didn't expect that at all, really. Just, you know, we always just take whatever
yeah.
comes to you,
yeah.
generally as a muso. And,
absolutely.
If you can go anywhere and tour somewhere because of that, then we'll just, you know, we got to play in Alaska about 6 months ago. Always yeah. say we. Always talk about that I have other band members because it's weird when you're by yourself for about 10 months on the road.
Yeah, no doubt.
But no, it's really good. And,
yeah, cool.
You just it's the best thing apart of it is just to play festivals like this and just see as much of the world as possible.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, definitely. So I think it's fair to say that that was the album that kind of announced your presence to the world. Like, well, yeah, the world in general, I guess. So, yeah. And it's been quite the process since then. Like you said before, it's pretty much on the back of that album that you've been able to tour and play in places like Blues Fest and that sort of thing. So, what have you learned from this process that you'll take into the next?
What have I learned?
Yeah.
It's definitely all about touring. I think that's the most important thing. You've got to just, it's almost like being a courier driver, really. You're better off, it's like you spend most of your life driving and then you get to, at the end of the night, you get to play for half an hour or 40 minutes, whatever it is. But, because
yeah.
really, I mean, I do about 100,000 K a year and it's just Australia alone. And, but you really kind of have to do that. You have to do all
yeah,
the driving and miles. And,
yeah.
You know, that's one thing I've learnt that's what it is. You know, you've
yeah.
got to enjoy that process, and
definitely.
That I think that's the biggest key to it.
Yeah, okay.
Just spread it out as far as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of spreading out and driving 100,000 K, you've got a pretty sweet customised van out
yeah.
the back. It's not your average tour van, from what I remember.
No, it's got a little bar in the back there and a PA system built inside. You can plug a guitar in there and jam away and. Oh, it's great, it's especially for festivals too, because you can go out there and chill out and
yeah, definitely,
and warm up or whatever you need to do. And it's yeah, I love it. So it's my second home, really.
I seem to recall there were like some flashing neon lights in there too.
Yeah, it's flashing lights, bit of a party. We had a few after parties in there. It's got a shower, toilet, stove. You can cook and be healthy, and you know, not eat meat pies every day.
That's too easy. So before we open it up to audience questions, tell us what the rest of the year holds for you. Obviously, you're working towards a new record. When's that likely to see the light of day?
Yeah, that's the main goal. I mean, after this, go back to Sydney with C6 Steve. And then there's about... I've got about 3 weeks off, and I've got to nail the rest of the album in that time. And then we start touring after that. It'll be
yeah.
a couple of months on the road.
Yeah, cool.
In Australia, and then maybe back into America at the end of the year again.
Sweet. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's open up for some questions from the audience. Anyone have a question for Claude? Can't really see anything. Any questions for the lovely Claude Hay? He's sitting here with his feet up, ready to answer a couple of questions. Here's one right here.
Did anyone, like, in particular, like, inspire you to start using, like, the loop pedals and stuff?
Yeah, totally. it was a long time ago, actually. I was in, I was just at this little bar in Sydney. It was about maybe 6-7 years ago. And this guy was playing, I think his name was Tim Id, I-D. And he was kind of like a Jeff Buckley finger picker playing sort of guy. That sort of, all originals, but that sort of vein. It was really lovely, beautiful sort of, he'd sort of strum chords and then he'd play this lovely chordal finger picking thing over the top. And I was like, what the hell is he doing? I just saw this, it was just one little pedal and I just ran up to him after the set and said, what's that? And I actually literally went out the next day and bought that pedal And I had it at home for about a week, and it gave me the shits. And I threw it under my bed. And no word of a lie, I never touched it again for 1 year. But I grabbed it out again because I was doing a band thing at that time. And then we were kind of having a break. I was going overseas to do some gigs in Malaysia, actually. It was a kind of an island thing. And I brought it then. I thought, I'll give it a go again. And ended up writing some songs there and doing some solo stuff there. And it was really just from seeing that guy play that thing, it just blew my mind away. And it's a great pedal. There was only one available back then. It was the Akai one, but now they're everywhere. Everyone's making them. They're quite cheap. But loop pedals are. It was definitely from that guy there. And now, there's just so many people out there doing that now. It's great. The more, the better. A lot of dance guys too. A lot of sort of hip hop and sort of electronic music. I see a lot of artists doing that as well, and it's a good pedal for that.
Cool. Any other questions for Claude?
How do you go about making your other band members, those weird instruments that you used on Saturday night?
Oh, yeah. I having different instruments is a huge influence in terms of sound. If I pick up a sound and some instrument and it gives a different sort of sound, it definitely influences what I write. But I kind of always try to find something a little bit different and turn it into an instrument. But the twin neck guitar, like I was saying before earlier over there, it was kind of, that was just a piece of wood someone chucked out on the side of the road. It was an old kitchen bench top, lovely piece of solid maple. It had a sink and everything attached to it, but I thought, oh, that'll make a good guitar one day. So I chucked that in the back of the shed. It was there for a year or two or something, and then I pulled it out and had this idea of making a bass and a guitar, and it was really just for looping. And then the sitar thing, that was kind of, just a normal sort of sitar, and I just rip all the strings off it and put bass strings on it and separate bits and pieces on it just so it sort of modify it really for looping. And the new one I've got, the Stella, I named her. That's kind of more of a cigar box vibe type guitar made out of a baking tray. And that's kind of got that old classic sort of resonator sound, but it's also too got bass pickups and guitar pickups with separate splits, so you can actually, it's kind of a new thing for me, but it's great because you can go to different chords and not actually have to loop it. But it's got a nice crusty old tinny sound. I know that makes no sense, but I love that sort of tone, and it does inspire you to write new songs. So I try to get as, if it wasn't like an issue with in terms of carrying this stuff, I'd have at least probably 15 guitars on stage, I reckon. It'd never end. I'd have about 3 twin necks at least. But I don't know if I answer your question, but hopefully that's all right.
Sweet. I reckon we've got time for one more question if there is one. Yep, up the back.
Hi, Claude. What musicians have you been inspired by over the years?
Actually one of my favourite ever singers is John Fogerty. I absolutely love that guy, Creedence Clearwater, especially when I'm on the road a lot. Even in America, every day I was putting on Creedence Clearwater. I love it when I'm on the road listening to that sort of stuff. But anything from that, I like a lot of rock music too. I like Chris Cornell. I think his voice is phenomenal. I love Ben Harper. It's generally kind of rock, blues, funk based. I love all the old P-Funk stuff as well. I love that kind of big bass on the one groove vibe. Anything with a kind of groove edge. I really like a solid groove, and that always gives me a bit of an inspiration. But it's generally kind of a rock edge, I suppose. Rock, blues edge for sure.
Nice one.
In terms of blues, this is kind of a weird thing that I actually never, ever, ever liked the blues when I was young. When I first started playing guitar, I had no interest in it whatsoever. Because I grew up and, there was no internet. And where I grew up, there was kind of, you never really got to see much blues. It was kind of never around. And actually, I was a big Steve Vai head who I missed the other night. But a friend of mine gave me this DVD, and probably the biggest influence in my whole entire life was a movie called Crossroads. And that had, of course, got Robert Johnson in there, but it got Ry Cooder. And Ry Cooder's, without question, one of my favourite all-time ever guitar players. And that Feeling Bad Blues is like, I listened to it just the other day, and every time I hear that, all my hairs just go up. But Ry Cooder is, that is just phenomenal. He's one of my favourite ever guitarists. And that was really from from another point of view, but it really was just from that movie. I got a lot of influence from that. And back then, when I was first started playing, you really couldn't get much except from movies. When some, it was hard to get CDs, and, well, not CDs, records back then.
It's interesting you say that, because I asked Alice Fraska just the other day where she got her blues influence from, and she cited that same Crossroads movie.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. I've got to check it out.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's like Paris, Texas, too. It's just the playing in it is just, it's jaw-dropping. It's phenomenal. I've never heard anything that moves me as much as the guitar playing in that movie.
Fantastic.
It's phenomenal.
Cool. I reckon we'll let you go, mate. But ladies and gents, Mr. Claude Hay.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Rhythms podcast from Bluesfest 2012, produced by the media students of Southern Cross University.